This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
John Whitehead is the executive director and the founder of the Rutherford Institute online at rutherford.org. He joins us in studio. Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, good afternoon.
How have you been? Happy New Year to you.
Pretty good.
Things going well?
Yeah, very busy.
Yeah, this is a busy time of year for everybody. I think that the holiday lull is officially over. Everybody, it seems, I run into now is just got a long to-do list and a million things to do and running here and there and trying to get everything done.
Yeah, I think that well, especially for us, you know, this with legal cases and all the issues we try to tackle and dealing with student interns from the University of Virginia. And the summer we have our student intern program for law students. We have law students come in from all over the United States. So it gets increasingly busier up through August.
We're going to talk this hour, spend the entire hour with John Whitehead, and we invite you good folks to join the conversation at 977-1070. You know how it works. You just pick up your cell phone, pick up your phone, give us a call if you've got a comment or a question. And speaking about this time of year, it's the flu season, and it's been going around. And you wrote about that recently, this whole idea of actually you wrote an article titled, "Which is More Dangerous to Your Health, the Flu or the FDA?"
Yeah, what I focused on was the drug Tamiflu, which was first approved by the FDA in 1999 and the Food and Drug Administration. And there were all these claims that it was going to cure this and cure that. And the United States government went out and purchased 20 million doses of Tamiflu at the cost of $2 billion in the event that we had a bird flu pandemic, which never occurred. The Pentagon paid a whopping $58 million in July 2005 for treatments for U.S. troops around the world at the same time that Donald Rumsfeld was one of the major stockholders in the corporation that owned Tamiflu, and he made a lot of money off of that. Well, in 2004, cases started popping up around the world in the United States with all this strange behavior, boys committing suicide, teenagers having these problems. They all were connected to Tamiflu. And a lot of concern was raised, and the FDA was challenged about it. And it took them 2 years to finally put a warning label on the product. But there's a fellow named David Graham, who's Associate Director for Science and Medicine, and he's a Senior Drug Safety Researcher for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And he says this is a quote, "The FDA is responsible for 140,000 heart attacks and 60,000 dead Americans. That's as many people that were killed in Vietnam in the Vietnam War." And what he's talking about is the fact that the FDA has been so lax in the drugs they approve, Vioxx, heart attacks, and those kind of things. And we've done quite a bit of research in the FDA and find that people that actually serve on the Food and Drug Administration, many of them go get jobs later with the big drug industry and the what we call big pharma.
Very well-paying jobs.
Very well-paying
jobs.
Yeah,
yeah.
But here's a strange thing is that when we looked into how these drugs were tested, the usual way the FDA actually tests these drugs is they let the drug companies do their own testing. You know, it's like the fox investigating the fox kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's one reason you're probably getting this kind of really strange fact that we're approving drugs that are quite dangerous, like Vioxx and Tamiflu, and we're putting them out to the general population. We're not really careful in what we're doing. And so it's something that people need to know about and really, really, really be careful and check out when you're taking drugs. That even if it's approved by our government, which is notoriously incompetent in some areas, and I think this is one area, we just have to be very, very careful.
Yeah, and of course it is that revolving door between the regulators, and this isn't the only industry where that happens, but it's certainly where we're talking about where lives are lost because of decisions that are made in Washington between these folks who, you know, either just had a job in the industry or are looking forward to a job in the industry. I was talking in the last hour about a new vaccine that was just approved by a House committee here in Virginia, a vaccine that would be, if the law passes, it will be required for middle school age girls to get a new vaccine against some a cervical cancer or something like that. The vaccine was just approved like 2 months ago, and they already have lobbyists here in Virginia trying to put, and they're doing it in D.C. and Maryland as well, trying to push it through to require our government to put more shots into our kids.
Well, the thing is, if you go up in Washington, D.C. on 14th Street and see all those offices, many of them are occupied by people in the pharmaceutical industry. So there's billions of dollars spent on lobbying people in the FDA and Congress. So you have to really be careful. You know, the thing that I think that the American people have to understand, and we fought a lot of lawsuits in Washington, D.C., and we've sued a lot of politicians. The point is, and government agencies, our government tends to be very corrupt at certain points, and the only way you can hold them accountable is through lawsuits and getting on shows like this and saying, wake up, ladies and gentlemen, and affecting it at the local level. I mean, I'd be very careful about inoculating any of our children, any kind of drugs. I mean, just be really, really careful what we're doing here, and just realize that there's a lot of money to be made. And to give you an example, I went in to get some cold medicine last week at one of the local pharmacies here and stood in the line, and an older lady walked up to the front of the counter, and she got her pills, and it was $190. And she said for 10 pills, and she didn't have medical insurance. And I just wanted to shrink back. I mean, it's just amazing how much money can be made. And there's a bill now before Congress for generic drugs, which will make it cheaper. And as we've heard, President Bush is threatening to veto it, which is just crazy, which may lead to the fact that, and as we all know, George Bush has strong ties to the drug industry.
Yeah, and it's just another example that makes you scratch your head and wonder, does this president stand with the people, or does he stand with, you know, CEOs and corporations and the folks in those boardrooms, that tiny fraction, 0.2% of America, that makes the billions of dollars off of these drugs? And it's mind-boggling.
Well, too, I think that as we see with people like the president, they come from very wealthy families. I remember when George Sr. went to the grocery store and didn't know how to shop back when he was president. They don't really understand that there are people out there that have trouble affording these drugs. They're having to try to go over to Canada. That's been blocked now just to buy some pills to stop their pain. So do they really care? I don't really know if they do or not. But I think we have to start holding these people accountable. And this bill for generic drugs, I mean, call your congressman. These are things that we need. We need to drive these drug prices down, number one. Number two, we need to make sure that the FDA is held accountable if they're putting bad drugs out on the market.
Yeah, I mean, the law is such now so that the government cannot even negotiate for lower prices. The Republicans will not allow our government to negotiate for lower prices on drugs. And it's outrageous.
Yeah, they have us by the throat, in other words.
The drug companies.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Our guest is John Whitehead, the executive director and founder of the Rutherford Institute, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Let's take a very quick break. We're back in two. This is Charlottesville. Right. Our guest in studio is John Whitehead. He's the executive director and the founder of the Rutherford Institute. If you'd like to join this conversation, the phone number is 977-1070. Woody is on line one in Charlottesville. Woody, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Very, very good. Go right ahead.
I'm wondering if Mr. Whitehead will be endorsing full socialized medicine here in the United States, and also explaining how that will all be paid for, because it seems that he's not very happy with the way our medical system is running right now. Also, I'd like to know what his opinion is of the huge drug entitlement program that has just been put through.
Woody, let me ask you, if we say that the drug prices are too high and that the pharmaceutical companies have our government by the throat, in what way does that endorse socialized medicine?
Well,
that's a big leap.
He seems to be very much, he made a nice little jab that Donald Rumsfeld owned stock in whatever company it was that made that drug.
Fact.
Making it seem like it's a bad thing for somebody to own stock in a company. Everybody knows, if you talk to anybody in finance, would say that owning pharmaceutical stocks is a good investment. Are people in government not? Is he saying that people in government should not own stock in companies because it would be a conflict of interest?
Well, let's let him answer. Thanks.
About the Rumsfeld thing, yeah, I think that is a conflict of interest. When you're making millions of dollars off of a product and you're a public officer, I don't know how you can be unbiased. I mean, you're supposed to represent the people. At that point, you would be representing yourself. So that's just my opinion. We just have to really be careful. People in power making millions of dollars off of a drug that is potentially unsafe. I mean, that's just something that needs to be looked into. As far as socialized medicine, no, that's not what I'm saying. I haven't really, really taken a position on that. What I do believe, though, is that we've got to get the drug prices down. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, I saw a comparison once on a list of like 20 major drugs. The actual cost of making some pills was like 10 cents a pill, and they were charging $40 or $50 per pill when you got the prescription. Now, do I think that's fair? Do I think that's making money off of people's sicknesses? Yes. Do I think that's moral? No, I think it's immoral. So it's the point of our government to bring those kind of things into line, you know, and our representatives should make sure that there's the ones being gouged, and especially in the sense of people's sicknesses. Nobody should be in the, and we shouldn't allow anybody in this country to make millions upon millions of dollars off of someone's sickness. Sure, they should make a profit. I believe in free enterprise, but to prey on people, old people, I mean, there's just so many people. I have a father now who has Alzheimer's, and if he didn't have the insurance, I don't think we could take care of him just because of the drug prices. So do I think that's unfair? Yes. So what's the responsibility of our government in those kind of situations? It's to make sure that the American citizen, and I'm talking about the person at the bottom of the ladder, is treated, they should be treated fairly.
And what I find most outrageous is that the president obviously doesn't believe in the free market either. He's standing in the way of the free market actually doing what it's doing, and he has set it up such that the government is protecting the pharmaceutical companies and keeping the prices inflated.
And we go back to lobbying, the Abramoff and all those things we hear, all the crooked deals that go on in D.C., all the money that the people in the drug industries have to lobby and to do these things to make sure they can keep high prices on their drugs. I mean, I think all that should be dismantled. I just disagree with that. I don't think that congressmen should be lobbied at all. I really don't. I think they're up there to do one thing, not to be lobbied, but to represent me. I vote for them, and I don't want some drug lobbyist going there to make sure that I pay 10 times the price of a pill. It just isn't fair.
I remember when I was lobbying a senator everybody knows, and I should mention his name, but a Republican senator, and I was sitting with an LA of his, was lobbying him on issues of autism, and about this issue, the pharmaceutical companies, and he said, you know, when you're not here, my conference room table is full of lobbyists. He said, there is more of them here for the pharmaceutical company than there are for the weapons manufacturers and gun lobbyists. I mean, it's the number one most powerful lobby in D.C. are the drug companies. Now, does that mean they're evil? No. But are they doing things that we should stop? Yes.
They have too much money and too much influence. Yeah.
We're talking with John Whitehead, the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. Woody, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate you chiming in, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. I sort of get impatient, and I shouldn't, but I get impatient with folks who listen to the radio, and they listen to Hannity all day, and they listen to one side of the story, so that if somebody comes on here late in the day and says, I don't think this is right, they instantly think that what you just said is we need to socialize medicine. And, I mean, they've been trained to hear that when you didn't say that.
Yeah, I had no idea saying that. I just think that our government is totally unaccountable to the people. And you'll see it in some of the other things we'll probably talk about in this program. I mean, we're so far away from it now, especially in D.C. I mean, really, we need to make some strong impacts on the local level. But, yeah, it's remember, the Constitution starts off with those three magic words, we the people. It's our fault. And it's great that we have shows like this where Woody can sound off and I can sound off. But the thing is, we've got to hold these people accountable, put their feet to the fire, make them do the right thing. And the right thing is to treat everybody should be treated fairly in this country. This is a democracy.
John Whitehead, the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. And just a reminder that you can read all of John's commentaries online at the website rutherford.org. Our guest in studio is John Whitehead. He's the executive director and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. David is online one. David, thanks for the call. You're on with John Whitehead.
Mr. Whitehead, it's a pleasure, sir. I look at your website and read it all the time.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. I have a question for you. I was actually down in the General Assembly today trying to get a piece of legislation passed that was totally tabled. But I was wondering, and I hope you're taking, I don't often hear the show because I live over in Harrisonburg, but there's a systematic problem going through the state of Virginia, Mr. Whitehead, where non-custodial parents who are behind on child support are being jailed on civil contempt charges, and there's one guy that's on the most wanted list right now who was jailed. The court found him indigent for the purposes of appointing him counsel, found him in civil contempt, and said, well, you can get out of jail, mister, if you pay $20,000. And in every, you know, I'm a paralegal over in Harrisonburg, and I'm also a non-custodial parent, but in every other state that I've done research on, the courts aren't allowed to impose purge clauses without a finding that the non-custodial parent has the ability to pay the purge clause. And I was a little bit disappointed in the committee, but I'm wondering if that's something your organization might be able to take a look at, because it's not just one or two jurisdictions this is happening in. It's a wholesale jailing of fathers.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, people out there that have some legal questions in the local area, our phone number is, of course, 434-978-3888. If you'd like to give us a call, we'll look into that matter and see what we can do. And also, you can email me personally at johnw@rutherford.org and with any information, we'd look at it.
Sir, thanks very much, and I enjoy this program. It's a shame you guys cut the power at 5:30 because I can't hear you anymore.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Take care.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much. That's an issue that you'll have to take up with the FCC. And I didn't say that, but we wish it's actually not the power's not cut, but the signal changes, the direction of the signal changes when the sun goes down. Which, believe me, I wish that wasn't the case, but I do want to remind folks that you can hear all of these interviews in their entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at your convenience right there on your computer at sevillepodcast.com. Let's continue our discussion with John Whitehead, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. You wrote a commentary recently, published all over the country, and you got the idea from right here in Albemarle County. It had something to do with our school children right here.
Yeah, some parents contacted us and talked to me, one of them specifically, and said they were very, very concerned about some tests their children were taking in Charlottesville schools, and laid out some of the questions, and then we did some research and looked at some of the tests. It's called the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance System. And the parents were very, very concerned because they didn't even know about it. And some of the questions, just to give you an idea that the kids were asked, and these are middle school kids. Have you ever seriously thought about killing yourself? Have you ever made a plan about killing yourself? Have you ever used marijuana? Have you ever used any form of cocaine, including powder, crack, freebase? Have you ever had sexual intercourse? The last time you had sexual intercourse, did you or your partner use a condom? Have you ever sniffed glue, blah, blah, blah? Have you ever taken down all kinds of really strange, invasive questions? And the purpose of the test is supposedly to monitor behavior or whatever. Of course, there's no real way that this can be verified, that these kind of tests work. But what we did, we looked into it further. About 43 states are using these tests, along with the so-called teen screen tests, which are aimed at preventing suicide. Again, no significant studies have been done to say that any of these tests are in any way valid in fact, the so-called teen screen test, which has very similar questions, has what they call an 84% false positive rate. And this means that 84% of the teens diagnosed as having some sort of mental health or social disorder are, in fact, perfectly normal teenagers. So what you're having is kids going to school one day thinking they're normal. They come home at night, and sometimes they're diagnosed by some counselor in the hallway that they have mental problems. We have actually have a case in Indiana where we've sued a school district over this, violating parental rights. But here's the thing. If parents know about this, this is an entirely different matter. But in most of these cases, parents don't know. And here's how they get around there is a federal law that requires written consent. What the schools do is they have what they call passive consent. They supposedly send a note home in the kid's lunchbox. Now, if you've ever had kids, how often did your kids not give you that note in the lunchbox, if it was sent home at all? So parents never know about this. They're shocked when they find out their kids are being asked about suicide. And one problem some analysts have with this is that they think this actually implants some pretty bad ideas in children's heads when they're being asked these kind of weird, strange questions without parents knowing.
You know, my first thought is, why are they doing this and not teaching history or Shakespeare or algebra or doing what a school's supposed to do? I mean, I don't get it. I mean, why are they doing this?
Well, talk about a socialized view of education. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think that there are some concerns among some professional educators that they need to find out more what kids are thinking, but I think we really have to be careful. And these are things that, to me, are parental prerogatives. There's a bill in Connecticut, which is excellent. It's being pushed through the assembly in Connecticut. We don't have anything like this in Virginia, which requires the written consent. Then it requires that the parents actually get a copy of the test. It requires they get a copy of the federal law on the matter, and they're fully informed. And so Virginia, if they had something like this, parents should have a chance. If they agree to this, it's fine. If they don't agree, but they should at least know about it before parents think their children are going to school to learn to read, write, to study literature.
Yeah, not get a mental health test.
And that's exactly what's happening in a lot of schools.
Yeah, and you point out that that's actually happening right here in our community.
That's where we first learned about it, in Charlottesville.
And so there might be parents listening who might not even know that these tests are being
most
done.
Most parents don't even know. The reason these parents knew, their children went home and said, I took a test today about killing myself. The parents are obviously shocked. So I think that, again, it's the public schools are run by the government, and the government's not being accountable to the parents. The parents need to know about these things before the children take the test.
We're talking with John Whitehead, the executive director of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 977-1070. David is on the line in Charlottesville. David, thanks for the call. You're on with John Whitehead.
Hey, yeah, thanks for the show today. Great topics. And the reason I'm calling in, I know you had been talking the last half hour about the drug companies and so forth. And that, I mean, that's a topic you can go off on many different tangents, cost, all this stuff. But the reason I called about that is, you know, I'm not calling to debate whether companies do or don't gouge or how much money they do or don't make. But I think lost in this particular debate sometimes is the fact that I think we do owe a thanks to the drug companies because they do a lot for the human race. They make wonderful drugs, wonderful medicines, and yes, it's not inexpensive. You know, clinical trials, to get all that going is not an inexpensive process. And at the end of the day, when you have to pay the bills for that, I think the people who take the medicines would certainly say, yes, I'm glad these medicines exist that allow me to improve the quality of my life and to increase my life, that I can spend time with my family and friends and be able to do things. And yes, it may cost a lot, but I doubt that you'd ask anyone who takes medicines that would they rather not have the medicines or would they rather be able to have the medicines to improve and extend their life. And that's the main point I just wanted to call. I mean, they get a lot of bashing, but I think it's important to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that that's true. But like I said, I saw a comparative analysis of what the pills actually cost with all the trials, and some of them were very, very, very cheap to do.
Oh,
with
sure.
All that.
There are certainly drugs that don't cost a lot to make. But, you know, there are a lot of drugs that do cost a lot of money.
We
also need to keep in mind, too, there ain't no free lunch. Somebody's got to pay the bills, and, you know, we can't, you know, somewhere, you know, I think if you start taking the incentive away from people and companies to do what they need to do, then why are they even going to be in business?
Well, I don't think you had to take the incentive away. I mean, people make normal profits. I think the problem that we're seeing with the drug industry, and this is not my opinion, this is an opinion by a lot of people who have really studied the problem in depth. They're not just making normal profits. They're making 20, 30 times the profit. And the problem is they are making it off of people who really need the drugs. So the question that you have to raise at the end of the day, is that the way that we should operate in this country? Should our government in some way regulate that? Then you look at the heavy lobbying industry in Washington, D.C., even here in Virginia. I mean, they're lobbying to make sure they can keep making exorbitant profits off of people who are actually having to go into debt to pay for 10 pills. Do I think that's right? No. I think it's immoral. I think our government needs to in some way control drug prices like they do any other. I mean, the way the gas prices or whatever, but the drug companies have a free rein, and I think it's time to pull that rein in and make sure that they, you know. And as far as quality of life, sure, but I guarantee you this, and I've seen studies on this, there are a lot of people on drugs they probably shouldn't be on. They're taking too many drugs, they're hooked, and if you go up and ask them, do you not want to be on these drugs, of course they're not going to say that. But do I think that the drug companies do good things? Yes, and we're not saying they don't. We're just saying, hey, let's give the consumer a break here, folks.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA. Coy Barefoot with you. We're dropping down to the 20s tonight. It's going to be cold, cold, cold. In the next hour, best seat in the house, Jed Williams and his crew in with all the latest sports coverage on UVA, Virginia Tech, you name it, right here on 1070 AM. Glad to have you with us. Want to thank my guests this hour on the program, Delegate Jennifer McClellan, Holly Hatcher, John Reddick, and John Whitehead, the Executive Director of the Rutherford Institute. Here in studio, if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 977-1070. Brian is on the phone in Charlottesville. Brian, thanks for the call. You're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Hi, Mr. Whitehead. I just want you to clarify a statement you made, an assertion that the vice president is making millions of dollars off the sale of these drugs. In what capacity is he earning that millions of dollars?
Not the vice president. It was Donald Rumsfeld when he was head of the Pentagon. You know, the Pentagon.
I'm sorry. Okay, how is he an officer with one or more of these companies, or?
No, he was one of the major stockholders in the company. See, in 2005, $58 million was spent by the Pentagon, which he was the head of, to buy the drug.
So
alone.
You're saying as Secretary of Defense, he's making millions of dollars off the sale of drugs?
Yes, Tamiflu and other drugs.
Because the Pentagon bought
that's a fact. You can go on websites. I mean, that's just a fact.
He personally made millions of dollars.
He made a lot of money, yeah.
I mean, that's quite an assertion to make without being able to be more specific than you're being right now. I mean,
well, you can, I mean, it's a fact. You go to our website, there's all kinds of information on, Donald Rumsfeld and his stock holdings and, Tamiflu. I mean, it's a fact. You can do your own research, sir. I mean, it's there.
Yeah.
You don't have to take my word for it.
Brian, thanks so much for the call. We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. And before we let you go, you have a couple of articles, one of which has yet to be published, regarding the Bush administration and the war on privacy, the war on democracy even. What is this all about?
Yeah, a couple things are going that are interesting. I think probably most people don't know that while everybody was out shopping on December 20th, 2006, there was a new postal bill, and George Bush has issued 750 what we call signing statements. After he's only vetoed one bill, that's the stem cell research bill. He produces these signing statements. Usually presidents have used these to thank supporters and stuff. George Bush has used them in a different way, 750, more than any other presidents in the history of this country. With this new postal bill, and again, McCain came up with his torture bill, Bush basically said he could ignore that. I mean, that created a lot of news at the time. But with this new postal bill, what he's saying is, and he issued a signing statement which said that basically he could open your mail if he felt there was a terrorist threat. This is and without a warrant, without a judge giving him that power. And that's basically the problem. People have to, you know, our Fourth Amendment is really clear that before the government listens to your phone calls, goes through your mails, they need some kind of approval from a judge so that you don't have an executive power that's become a law unto itself. So that's the power he says he has and is going to exercise. So I guess the question is that right or is that wrong? Well, as a legal organization, we have problems with that for the main reason that we think the Bill of Rights is very, very important, and that if you're going to go through Coy Barefoot's mail to see if he's a terrorist, my mail, or people that some of the people have called here tonight, I think that a judge, unless it's an extreme emergency, I mean, we're not stupid here, I think that a judge should be able to decide whether or not he has a right to violate the Fourth Amendment to do that.
And of course, I guess the whole point is the president would like us to believe that every day we live in an extreme emergency, and a lot of people have bought that the terrorists are living among us and they're plotting and that they're that the president needs to be able to open any mail that he'd like to.
Yeah, see, that's the point of going before a judge to do any of this stuff, to listen to your phone calls, to read your mail, to read your emails, which we know they all do. The point is that you have to present facts that some kind of criminal activity is afoot. That's the basic standard of the Fourth Amendment. And the problem we're seeing with, especially the administration of this particular president, it just seems to not matter. I mean, it seems like that the Bill of Rights is there and you can just go around it. But, if we're going to keep any semblance of freedom and democracy in this country, we're going to have to make sure that we hold our public officials to the Bill of Rights and to the law.
John, tell us about the commentary that has yet to be published. It's titled Bush's Secret Government Undermines Democracy.
Yeah, that's another problem we're seeing is that routinely President Bush's aides, even Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, and most recently Alberto Gonzalez, 3.5 hours on January 18th, he was supposedly asked about or was asked about the FISA court, which oversees national surveillance issues. And supposedly there's a new agreement. The president's now going to obey the law, he says, and he's going to submit. When he listens to your phone calls or whatever, he's going to get, at least going to go through the FISA court. So Congress called Alberto Gonzalez before Congress and asked him basically, what's this agreement? What are you going to carry out? He refused to answer questions. 3.5 hours. I mean, you have to think about this a second. He's a non-elected official. He's telling Congress basically to stick it, which is what he's doing, and he's not going to tell them any information. In fact, he just basically says, I'm not going to do it. And there was a great statement by Patrick Leahy out of Vermont. He says, are you saying that you might object to the court giving us decisions you publicly announced? He says, are we a little in Alice in Wonderland here? But I think that for the president to go before Congress and say that he can't divulge something because of national security, and that's usually the mantra, is a different thing, but for non-elected officials to sit there and say, we're not going to answer your questions, I think we have a problem. The problem is this. The basis of democracy, I keep saying this to people, is accountability. Our government has to be accountable to us, and the people that we put in Congress are our voice and our ears. If the people who run the government, the bureaucrats, the non-elected officials in government, can tell Congress that it will refuse to answer questions that on major issues like your privacy and the Bill of Rights, we have a real dangerous thing happening at that point.
John Whitehead is
here. And the last thing I would say on that, yeah, maybe, is I think our Congress is extremely weak. They back off of these issues, and they have these hearings. Everybody goes home, and we write about them, and it's unfortunate.
John Whitehead's the executive director and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, and you can read all these commentaries online at rutherford.org. You folks have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.